It's the Healthy Woman Show on WJR with Marie Osborne and Dr. Jonathan Zaden, presented by Women's Excellence. Now here's your host, Marie Osborne.
Welcome into the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden of Women's Excellence. Dr. Zaden, we're wrapping up another great year with you on this show, bringing women's health to light. We've got a year wrap-up, how the pandemic affected the healthcare system. I know a segment we introduced last week that you love.
Oh, we're going to talk about our Ask the Doc segment. I don't know if anybody listened last week, but they gave me some challenging questions, so I'm interested to see what I'll get today.
And a little bit later in the program, too, a good friend of mine, Amy Lang, Fox News Detroit reporter and anchor, is going to be joining us, Dr. Zaden. She's had her own health journey recently with endometriosis and uterine fibroids. She's going to give us a real update on her health and how she really wants to talk about this and make it public, because this is what you're talking about all the time.
Endometriosis awareness is what we need, and we have the abilities to treat it. And now I think that the more people that get it, that have more of a prolific kind of lifestyle, the more people will understand that it's a real disease and they can get treatment for it.
Stay with us here as the Healthy Woman Show unfolds for December 2020. Dr. Jonathan Zaden, of course, alongside. Stay with us. Dr. Zaden, it's hard to believe that 2020 is coming to a close. And I know a lot of people, you hear them say, thank goodness this is over, because we've had quite enough.
Well, I'll tell you, 2020, I hear it every day, is a year that most people want to forget. But I'll tell you that it is a year that many of us, I think, will look back, and it will give us perspective. We've talked about this on the show in the past. I think that, you know, we've had a little more time with our families. We've had some time to rethink our lives and how we do what we do. We've done things more virtual in some cases, and we've all thought we've saved a lot of time. And we all have learned to cherish the relationships that we have when we are in the workplace, because now we've had an opportunity to miss them. So I think there's a lot of different things that are going to really wrap up over the next couple of months. And I think that, you know, this has been a good reset. I think, you know, in life, we all need to have a reset. And I think this vaccine really kind of let us think about what we're really doing in our lives. And so I find this to be an extremely exciting time. So I'm going to be that, voice of cheer upon all the doldrums of this vaccine and all that. And I'm going to say this for three reasons. Number one, I've gotten emails from two hospital systems that said that I am going to get the vaccine within the next week, or certainly before the next year it comes on board. So that's 2 to 3 weeks, maximum. So what does that tell me? That tells me that we're getting there, right? I mean, we're getting to that point. Number two, we're way more familiar with this virus than we ever were. And despite the fact that we're having so many increased cases, our death rates aren't as high as we would have expected early on in the pandemic, when we were making projections and when we were seeing those earlier numbers. And so what we're seeing is that healthcare is catching up, right? Just like anything else. At one time, strep throat was the worst thing ever, and we caught up to that. And now strep throat is a common ailment that we treat very quickly, and we're catching up to this. And then the third thing is that we've had, in America anyway, a lot of stress, right, with the election and everything else. And no matter how that turns out, no matter what happens, in a month or so, it's going to be over. And I think that's going to give us all a new direction, because that's something that I think the country really needs, is we need to have, you know, at least some solidification of our direction. So I'm very excited about what's going on in 2021.
So I'm curious to know what sorts of challenges you've overcome this year as a surgeon and in your practice as a whole. I know that when we started this show a couple of years ago, you were very much on the forefront of virtual visits, virtual office visits. And you really had to talk our listeners through, and your prospective patients through, okay, this is what it is and this is how it works. Right. And now almost right, all of us have had at least one virtual visit this year with our physicians.
Well, you know, everybody always laughs that I usually can predict the future. In this case, I didn't predict a virus for sure, but I did predict that people are getting busier. I said that a long time ago, and lifestyles are changing, especially in the United States. And I felt that virtual medicine was going to be a need. I also saw the opportunity years ago that there are many, many places, you know, that are listening to this. We have patients right now, or prospective patients, that are listening to this broadcast that are in rural areas where there isn't access to specialists. And, you know, we're going to talk to Amy Lang, right? And she wouldn't have that same access to specialists if she were north in Michigan. And so I saw virtual as a method to communicate to them. And I coined, you know, the term in our practice, specialized virtual care, specialty virtual care is what we call it. And so now we're very familiar with its use. And so what, you know, challenges do we overcome? We found all the problems with that, and we still find them every day, all the different connection problems, all those things. And we're getting better at it each day. And then one of the other challenges that we had is constantly changing a protocol to treat people, because we have other things in place that are required by regulation, right, to do maybe in person that we couldn't do anymore. So we found workarounds around those. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I think the thing that any business owner that's listening to this, or anybody that's managing people, the staffing shortages, how we deal with that on a day-to-day basis, and the fact that our customer service was severely impacted by the fact that we had, you know, a quarter of our workforce out at some points throughout this pandemic. And so, you know, those were the challenges that we really did. And then one more, and I think everybody will resonate with this, in that, you know, we realize that it is not us only. We are a big web team, right? So hospitals are a big part of what we do. We have to bring people to surgery centers and hospitals, and their restrictions impacted our patients, even if we wouldn't have impacted our patients. So we really learned that the interconnection of healthcare is important. I've said that through the show hundreds of times, probably, Marie, that, you know, we're all part of a big team. We found that out firsthand really quick around March 11th, 2020, right? And so, you know, and people were inconvenienced, and, you know, and you know, it was difficult on them. They had something scheduled and they couldn't have it done. So, you know, I think we've really overcome a lot of challenges, and I really think that, you know, it's probably made us a better entity.
Dr. Zayden, when we come back, I know a segment that we've just introduced a couple of months ago, Ask the Doc. This is where we get to ask you questions. Patients have asked you questions that they'd like to have answered. A variety of topics. You don't know what's coming. That's coming up next here on The Healthy Woman Show on WJR. You're listening to The Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zayden of Women's Excellence. Dr. Zayden, before we get to Ask the Doc, we just wanted to cover one more base with you. Can you give us a little bit of a glimpse of the future of healthcare after post-COVID-19? What patients can expect in this coming year when it comes to healthcare?
I think this is going to be one of the most dynamic years for healthcare ever, because we've always kind of set it and forget it. You go to the doctor and you do what you're going to do at the doctor's office, and you get your labs and you get all those things. Well, we spent about 7 or 8 months, right, learning about how to do things virtually. And we're going to start to implement a lot of things where we can do a hybrid between a virtual and an office visit, or getting your labs in a more convenient way, even if you're doing the visit virtual. I think this is going to be a game changer for patients. And I think that people should start to really look out for these types of new processes that are going to be happening, and things that they can learn about from their doc without necessarily just going into the office. It's going to be a big change in how people do their day-to-day healthcare needs. So I'm excited about it.
And it's good to know. Up next, Ask the Doc, and for this, we like to bring in Jessica Reset. She's the Patient Outreach Coordinator at Women's Excellence. Hi, Jessica. We're glad you're on board with us. What questions do you have for the doc today?
This should be interesting. I swear she spends her time just thinking about how to...
I spend weeks just preparing the hardest questions.
Bring them on. I'm here.
These are good questions. Okay. We kind of sought out some of our patients, you know, in the past few weeks, and, you know, we promoted the last Ask the Doc section to them and let them see what it was all about. So some of these questions are actually, you know, kind of unique, and I'm sure a lot of people have the same one. So I'll jump right into it. The first question is, I drench my pajamas and sheets constantly with night sweats. It's annoying. It's embarrassing. What can I do about it?
I think that depends a little bit about whether you're premenopausal or you're postmenopausal. So I'm not sure who gave you that question, but it didn't say that in the question, right? So that we don't know what age that person is. So let me address it for both, and then maybe I can help this listener. So if you're premenopausal, you need a full metabolic workup, including labs, because we need to make sure that you don't have like hyperthyroidism or something else that could be causing these types of night sweats. If you're postmenopausal, obviously statistically, it's much more likely that it's just the menopause itself. And in that case, we would not only do that metabolic workup and rule out any other factors, but then we would do a full hormonal evaluation to determine what's the best approach to moving forward. And then assess that patient, because in many cases, right, they may not want to use hormones, or they may not be a candidate for hormones. And so we have other alternatives that are non-hormonal that we can help those patients with that may or may not be as effective, but we should give them all those choices. One of the things that I've kind of learned throughout all of this is that when somebody says it's annoying and embarrassing, what they mean is it's really impacting their life. And so this is one of those things where I really believe that, you know, we should really evaluate it first thoroughly, because, you know, too many times I think you go to the doctor, you tell them something and they're like, all right. You know, and then you walk out and you didn't really get that question answered. And, you know, sometimes there's four or five problems in a visit where you can't really answer it as a doctor. I mean, you've already spent, you know, your allotted time on the first three points, and then they bring up this point and it's pretty tough. My recommendation would be that you set up a separate visit just for this, because this is complicated and it takes a lot of laboratory, and you want to know what other symptoms, such as, is there decreased sex drive associated with this? Are they getting vaginal dryness? Are they getting hot flashes during the day? Are there, you know, is there weight gain associated? I mean, there's a lot of things that we want to evaluate. So this isn't something that you just go to your annual exam and go, oh, by the way, I'm having this, what can you do? I mean, it can be done that way, but it's best if you do it as a separate visit. How's that for being wordy?
No, that was great. That was a lot of good information.
Absolutely.
And, you know, you were kind of talking about complicated. And the next question, we got a ton of, you know, questions just about this topic alone. But this was kind of the best worded one. And it was, I'm gaining weight even though I'm exercising, I'm eating well, but things haven't changed. So why is that? And it kind of pertains to what everyone's been dealing with this year. We've all been home, the gyms haven't been open. So what could be causing the, you know, lack of losing weight?
Yeah, I think we started the show, if I remember, we did a show early on in March, right in the beginning of this, and we talked about the COVID-10 and the quarantine 15. And I remember that was the first time I had heard that. I don't remember who said it on the show. So I think that's what you're getting at here. But in this case, people, what you're saying is, and if you go through that question again, you said they are exercising, correct?
Yep, they're exercising, and to them, they're eating well, but nothing's changing.
Well, one of the things that I've learned is that the perception of somebody eating well and them actually eating well are two different things. So what I would recommend is to get a real consultation. You know, we do it at Women's Excellence. We have weight visits. But, you know, really take a look at what that is, because I hear a lot of people tell me that they're eating very well. You know, for example, I had somebody that came in. This is a perfect example. She said that, you know, she's gained about 10 pounds and that she's been eating really well. And I said, okay, you know, typically we, you know, if we want to lose weight, we're on a lower carb diet. She said, absolutely, I am. And then I said, well, you know, what are you typically, you know, eating? How are you managing that? And she told me she's been getting all healthy stuff at Tropical Smoothie. And, you know, and she was getting two or three tropical smoothies a day. And then some other protein shakes. And I was thinking to myself, well, you know, okay, that's a start, but there's a lot of sugar in tropical smoothie. There's a lot of carbohydrates. So, I mean, on the forefront, it appears healthy because it's a fruit, but, you know, but there's a lot of sugar in that. And then I asked her, I said, you know, the next question, and I said, so, you know, how is, you know, what are you eating with your children and stuff when you're eating dinner? And then she said, well, I'm just eating normal when I'm eating dinner. I just eat a little bit less. So she's actually taking these healthy foods on top of the food she's already eating. So I think number one is perception. What are the eating habits? And number two is the exercise that they're doing, actually doing the things that they need to burn weight. And then the most important thing, a metabolic workup, right? Subclinical hypothyroidism can make you gain weight. You don't even know it. Undiagnosed borderline diabetes, polycystic ovarian disease. These are all things that can definitely, you know, be attributed to weight gain. And you can exercise and you can eat well, but think of that as you are going on the, here's a Michigan analogy, we're going on the Asable River backwards. If our metabolism isn't working, okay, you can paddle as hard as you want, but if you're going in the wrong way of the stream, it's tough. We got to get the metabolism working for us so that the stream is working for us. And so we have to work that up. And I think that's a very important aspect. So I'll leave it at that. A metabolic workup, to be succinct, a very thorough evaluation of what their diet is, their perception of it, and what it is in reality. And then also, you know, probably an exercise plan that makes sense, that's, you know, achievable.
So Jessica, one quickie. Let's get one last one in, but it's got to be quick.
All right. I've noticed my partner and I aren't having as much sex as we used to as we get older. Is this normal?
Well, this is a question that I'm not supposed to give any personal items into. So, but I think that I hear this, you know, in people, you know, in the 45 to, you know, above age group quite frequently. And it's actually relatively simple, right? We do the things that we like to do and that we enjoy and that we have time to do in a non-stressful environment. And if you think about our sex life, there's a couple of things that happen as we get older. One is that we get more familiar with that process. You know, it becomes something that we've done many times before. So we you know, you lose interest in things that you do over and over again. Number one. Number two, we become familiar with our partner. So there's an environment that is more comfortable and less, you know, desire to please the other person per se. Meaning that, you know, you do a lot of other things to please them. You're cooking dinner for them. You know, maybe you're taking in their laundry. Maybe they're fixing your bathroom for you. Whatever it is, there's a lot of things that you're doing to satisfy your partner that aren't necessarily just sexual. When you first begin a relationship, it's a more sexual relationship. And then the third thing is that we've got some physical hormonal changes that occur. And we need to kind of look at those changes. So it's normal, I would say, for those reasons, environmentally and metabolically, hormonally. And what do we need to do is we need to work up the hormone side. And then we also need to realize that every relationship is a give and take, right? Because not having sex as much when you get older is fine if neither of the parties expect it, right? So if you're a postmenopausal woman and you really don't have that much interest in sex and your husband is traveling, you know, to China for months on end or to Germany, okay, and then it's not a problem, is it, right? It's only a problem if one person is not being satisfied. So you have to assess that. What is that balance? And once you put all those in place, it seems that this can get much better, and it really takes some consultation, and you have to think of this as a problem that you have to solve. Right? And then it will be easy to solve.
Jessica, thank you so much for joining us for Ask the Doctor. We'll look forward to another session with you next month. Dr. Zaden, great insights as always, and good measured responses. Coming up next here on the Healthy Woman Show, we have Amy Lang joining us, Fox News Detroit news anchor and reporter. She had her own health journey recently. She'd like to talk with us about it, and Dr. Zaden will be alongside. Stay with us here on the Healthy Woman Show. Welcome back to the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR with Dr. Jonathan Zaden of Women's Excellence. We have a special guest joining us today, Amy Lang, Fox News Detroit reporter and anchor, joining us to talk about her health journey recently with endometriosis and uterine fibroids. Amy, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I have to tell our listeners that I saw your Facebook post when you talked about coming out of the hospital, that you'd had this procedure done. And the hundreds of responses from people were overwhelming to see how many women found themselves in the very same situation that you found yourself in.
I thought that was so telling. You know, we have so many women out there who are dealing with this. And I started to really see that once I learned that I had to have a hysterectomy. So that was back in October, after years of dealing with these fibroids. You know, I had been diagnosed with fibroids in my 30s. I had a myomectomy that helped for a while. I was on Mirena, which is an IUD that helped with bleeding for a while. You know, meantime, pelvic ultrasounds showed, you know, that the fibroids were coming back. And ultimately, it was decided, you know, that they were just having such an impact on my sort of quality of life that it was time for a hysterectomy. So once I started talking about that with people, I realized how many other women were dealing with the same thing, whether it be fibroids or endometriosis or ablation, or what should they do? They're on medication, they've had a hysterectomy. I mean, honestly, the woman who was doing the latest pelvic ultrasound on me said, "Oh yeah, your uterus looks just like mine and I had to have a hysterectomy." And I went, "Whoa, really?" It had not even occurred to me that that might be the road that I was heading down, but it was the road that I needed to go down. And I just, the more people I talked to, the more concerned I became, and just my own coworkers at the fact that it seemed like their doctors weren't really listening to them. I have a dear friend in the business who you know as well, who was really just sort of at her wit's end. I mean, she kept going to the emergency room over and over and over again, trying to explain to them, "I'm telling you, I have this pain. I'm telling you, I'm in such agony." And at one point, they tried to do a psych eval on her. I mean, that's how much they weren't believing her. And, you know, it finally took the right doctor to say, "Look, here's what's going on with you. I think you need a hysterectomy." And now she is in just such, you know, a better place in her life. I mean, she just feels so grateful to not be in pain. And I think, you know, for me, you know, the fibroids were this sort of inconvenience and everything. But it wasn't until the doctor got in there for the hysterectomy that she found that I also had severe endometriosis. So I think there's just so many things that can be going on in our bodies that we're just not even aware of. And even with the best doctor, something like endo can be creeping around in there and wrapping itself around other organs and making your life miserable. And so I just feel like this needs to be a conversation that we all need to be having with each other and with our doctors to just bring more awareness to this and just not have it be such a taboo subject, you know? It's a hysterectomy. It's part of our bodies. This is what women are dealing with, and we need to talk about it.
Dr. Zaidan, I'm sure you want to jump in here because these are all topics you talked about so much.
Marie is probably laughing. She's like, "He said this at least 100 times on the show." But but I guess there's a couple of topics that I think our listeners need to be aware of. You are a fully functional woman that's been a news anchor throughout all these struggles. And I think that's a part of the story in that, you know, you've been continuing to get through your life despite the fact that you've been having all these difficulties. And it is only now that you've actually ascertained what's going on, but this has been going on for quite some time. You had a surgery before this. The endometriosis could have been there at the time of the myomectomy and wasn't even discovered even then. I mean, there's a lot of things, I think, to your struggle and story that I think people need to be aware of, and they can at least identify with someone like yourself that they can see on TV, you know? I mean, that's not what they normally can see, right? So, I mean, the fact that, you know, you had to take so long to get diagnosed, it really makes me proud that we as a company are very entrenched into the treatment of endometriosis. And as a matter of fact, I think you'll be very excited, Amy, because I know that the reason you're doing this show today, even though we've never talked until now, is because you want other people not to have to go through that journey. And so what we're doing right now is we're setting up the Endometriosis Treatment Centers of America. So it's designed to be the prototype for, you know, a national company that can provide treatment and diagnosis for people much faster based on symptoms. And they have a place now that they can go other than the emergency room to get, you know, diagnosed and then ultimately, you know, standard of care treatment. So, you know, you bring awareness to this and understanding that this has been going on for a while before you actually got diagnosed, I think is really great for our listeners.
Yeah, I think it's really important that people just understand that these are possibilities, you know, that it's not necessarily just normal to be walking around in pain because, yeah, once a month you get your period and that's just what it means to be a woman. It's just part of your burden to bear and just part of, you know, what it's all about. I mean, for myself, I was one of those teenagers who was on the birth control pill, you know, long before I was sexually active because I had such severe periods. They were very heavy. So, for me, that goes on through my 20s, you know, and it wasn't one of those things that I really gave much thought to other than, oh, it's here again. Oh, it's painful. It's heavy. It's those kinds of things. But I think that we are sort of, just programmed to just keep on getting on, you know, like, okay, so I'm in pain. So, you know, take some Aleve and get to work. You know, this isn't going to sideline you or mean that you can't go do your job, at least for me. But the fact is it does sideline people and they should not be, their pain should not be diminished because they can't get out of bed. You know, I mean, we should stop thinking that people are sort of making this up. I mean, it's very real.
And well, Amy, that is... I'm sorry, Dr. Marie. Zayden, go ahead.
I have to tell you, you said something earlier where, you know, somebody got a psych eval, your friend got a psych eval. I don't know if you are aware of this, and maybe you are, and I think a lot of people will, but the term hysterectomy came from removing the uterus because they thought women were hysterical.
Exactly.
It was to cure hysteria. I mean, there's no other etiology of that word. And so, you know, this isn't new, right? I mean, this has been going on a long time. People come in and complain. They didn't know what was wrong with them. And they said, hey, there's something wrong with them. But, you know, if we take this out, maybe it will help because it happens during this time of the month, right? When a lot of those people were just poorly treated, right?
Right.
Dr. Zayden, that's exactly the point that I was going to touch on as well. Amy, that story about having the psych eval is what, you know, flagged me as well. This whole thing about not being believed is a real issue for women. I understand it's a real big issue for women of color that they are not believed when they are in pain and go to emergency rooms. Dr. Zayden, what would you suggest to people who might be listening, women who might be listening right now, who like Amy, were suffering or are suffering through this? What words can they use to put themselves front and center in front of a physician to say, I'm in serious pain?
Well, you know, the problem is that this is a cyclic disease, and Amy touched it. I'll expound on it to Tad, in that Amy said, you know, you just kind of live with it and you just kind of take some leave and you just kind of get through it and, you know, move on with your life. The problem is that it doesn't go from 0 to 100 quickly. It goes over time. So you get used to suffering, a certain level of suffering. And so after a while, it's only an incremental change in your suffering, right? So when you go to the doctor, typically you maybe even understate it. That's number one. And number two, you've got to go to a doctor who's really listening. And if you sense that your doctor's not listening to you, or you have a problem and you haven't solved it, do exactly what you do in all other phases of your life. If you call in a contractor to your house and they tell you that they can't fix your furnace, you call another one, right? I mean, if you don't feel like they're 100% accurate. And you know, a lot of times doctors are put on a pedestal that we, you know, can't always live up to. And you have to remember, not everybody presents the same. I say this a lot to patients in my office. We were the last real industry to go electronic and computerized. The reason for that wasn't because resources. Healthcare is 36% of the GDP. You've probably run stories of that, right? So if we're spending 36% of all the dollars in the United States on computers, because it's all different, because everybody is so different. It's so multifactorial in emotion and degree of pain and so on and so forth. And endometriosis is the perfect scenario for a misdiagnosis. It happens to younger women. They're busy. They can have a tendency to display emotion at that time. It impacts their sex life. So people have a tendency to believe that maybe they're just not having a good relationship. There's a lot of things you can blame it on. There's other organs in the body that you can blame it on. So there's just a million reasons why somebody can avoid it. My answer to your question is find a doctor that's listening to you and really work yourself up. If that doctor recommends a workup, don't go to a doctor to find out what is wrong with you and then tell him everything that you've learned on the internet. because a lot of times that stuff isn't necessarily accurate either. So I hear that a lot as a specialist for endometriosis. Many people come in all the time and they tell me exactly how they want me to treat them. And I'm like, finally, I have to reset that visit. And I say, listen, you've done all of these things with all these other doctors. And I know they said this and this person said that and this person did that, but that didn't work. So if you want, if you're coming to me, you have to kind of listen to my protocol and hopefully I can help you. And oftentimes they go home that day and I'm sure they're not too happy with me because they felt like they knew everything about it. And then they, you know, the people that really get better oftentimes listen to, you know, my evaluation and recommendation. And when I say that, I say, you gotta go to somebody who's gonna do action. You can't just keep passively taking birth control pills like Amy did.
Amy, very quickly, as we're closing out the interview, I know our listeners want to know how you're feeling right now. You're a few weeks out of your hysterectomy, so how are you feeling?
I feel pretty good. I mean, I'm a little sore, I'm a little swollen, I'm a little slower than I normally am, but I really feel great. I feel like I'm doing really well. You know, and I am grateful for a doctor who, you know, has really listened to me all along. And I think this just goes to what Dr. Zaidan is saying, you know, about it all being so tricky is, you know, I mean, here I was talking to my doctor and we were trying to mitigate this all this time, you know, and we still didn't realize some stuff was going on in there, like the endo, you know. So I just encourage people to, as the doctor said, get in front of the right doctor. Make sure your doctor's listening. I'm grateful mine was. I'm grateful for this hysterectomy, really. But I just hope that more people are being listened to. And, you know, when you talk about women of color, my friend who, you know, they wanted to do the psych eval, she is a person of color. And this is a very real concern within the Black community that they are not being listened to, Latinos, people of color, and we need to really pay attention to those women.
Amy Lang, nothing but the best for you and your family during the holiday season. We really hope you continue on your great road to recovery. Thanks for joining us today on the Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. We'll be right back. Dr. Zaidan, we're wrapping up another edition of the Healthy Woman Show, our last show for 2020. What a year it's been. And on this show, we seem to have covered so much ground.
Well, it's a crazy show. I mean, we had a news anchor, you know, that had endometriosis. We've got, you know, a lot of great questions. This Ask the Doctor segment, you know, from women in our community. And I got humbled because I'm here with two professionals on the show now, you know, and being able to talk with both of you at one time. It's really, it was a good show today, I think. I think women will learn a lot from the show.
It's always good to put a face to a lot of these issues. I know we've talked through the years with a lot of your patients. They're the ones who really bring us the real stories. So as we look ahead, it's kind of a different show than when we started. Do you like what we've done with our format?
I do. I think this, you know, it's a little off the cuff here, the Ask the Doc, but I think this is going to be the future. I think people really want to answer their questions. And, you know, we've gotten through many, many of the major topics, and we'll continue to do that over time. But I think that these are the same type of questions that I get in an exam room. And, you know, it's like talking to a patient during a visit. So I think this is a really great way for people to kind of get their question answered and understand what their next treatment approach is. So, yeah, I like it. I think we're going to continue it.
And I like that we're opening the exam room door without violating HIPAA, but at the same time, we're showing people that you're not alone, because those very same questions, of course, are the ones that come up time. You just said it, even when Amy was talking, you said, you know, I've heard this so many times from my own patients. So,
Well, everybody thinks that their problem is unique. We all do, right? And, you know, as my dad told me one time, it said, being a professional is about understanding something very simply because you've seen it repetitively, but other people have never seen it. And so you have to make sure that you use that empathy, compassion, and ultimately your skill in the right way. And that's exactly what it is every time. Every patient thinks it's something that nobody else has, because people don't want to talk about the problems they have. They just don't. They don't want to feel vulnerable to another friend, colleague, wife, or husband, sister. I mean, they just don't talk about it as much. It's becoming more commonplace for people to talk about their medical problems, but it's still not there.
You mentioned empathy and compassion, that's what your father talked about. And I just love that. And what a great theme for 2020. We could sure use a lot more of that. As we close out the show, I'd love to know, what are you thankful for in this very, very unusual year?
I'm thankful that we had the opportunity to slow down. You know, we have the opportunity as people, companies, and as a country to understand that we are a great place. We do have good families. We do have good relationships, and we don't always cherish them. I mentioned it earlier in the show. I mean, you know, your work family is a family that you miss now because you've been doing it virtually. And I think that, you know, I look forward to kind of, you know, really developing those relationships even more as we get through this pandemic. And I also think that people need to not listen as much. And I can't believe I'm saying this when I'm on the media, right, with a radio show. But we need to not listen so much about the negativity and think about the positivity. I mean, we have a vaccine coming now. You know, yeah. We've got a lot of things that are really happening, and we've made so many strides, so many innovative strides in medicine, not only in the last year, but, you know, over the last, you know, decades. And you know, we just take all that stuff that is positive for granted, and then we focus always on the negative. And quite frankly, I think we've had a narrative of negative for about, you know, 3 or 4 years really in the media. And I think that, you know, maybe we need to come out of this, and I'm thankful that I was able to slow down a bit and really understand what life is about. And I would encourage people to really think about how to make their own lives better and focus less about people talking about the negativity.
And I know you'd like to, in our closing minute, give a thank you.
Well, I'd like to just thank everybody at Women's Excellence. I'd like to thank all of our listeners, our patients, the support staff, because this pandemic has really taught me, I said it in the show earlier, if you don't have the right team, you will not survive. And, you know, everybody has a lot of expectations. You know, we wanted to give the same customer service we've always gotten, we've always given. We've also wanted to give the same, level of care hours-wise to patients. So we went out on a limb. But, you know, our providers were scared of contracting the virus. You know what I mean? They were overworked because they've been chronically understaffed. So I'd just like to thank everyone at Women's Excellence that have allowed us to continue to give care to patients. And then just to thank all of our patients for being, you know, in many cases, very, very patient. So we had patients and patient staff. So.
And Dr. Jonathan Zaden, we'd like to thank you and your staff and all the medical personnel for just being there for the rest of us when we really, really needed you. So our heartfelt thanks to you. And our heartfelt thanks, of course, to our audience. Thank you for joining us for another edition of A Healthy Woman Show here on WJR. We'll see you again in 2021. Stay healthy.
The Healthy Woman Show has been presented by Women's Excellence.